can't expect to learn in a few weeks what it took her years to do. Weeks? That was her timeline on this?
You have to try,
he said, almost gentle. Almost. Why are you so interested in this? Lissa asked suspiciously. Why do you care so much about bringing Dimitri back? I mean, I know you liked him, but you don't quite have the same motivation here that Rose does.
He was a good guy, said Christian. And if there's a way to turn him back to a Dampierre, yeah, that'd be amazing. But it's more than that. More than just him. If there was a way to save all Strigoi, that would change our world. I mean, not that sending them on fire isn't cool after they've gone on killing sprees. But if we could stop those killing sprees in the first place, that's the key to saving us. All of us.
Lissa was speechless for a moment. Christian had spoken passionately, and there was a hope radiating off of him that she just hadn't expected. It was moving. He took advantage of her silence.
Besides, there's no telling what you'd do without any guidance, and I'd like to reduce the odds of you getting yourself killed. Because even if Rose wants to deny it, I know you're going to keep pushing this.
Lissa stayed quiet yet again, pondering the situation. I listened to her thoughts, not liking at all where they were going. We're leaving at 6, she said at last. Can you meet me downstairs at 5:30? Tatiana wouldn't be thrilled when she heard about the new guest choice, but Lissa was pretty sure she could do some fast talking in the morning. He nodded.
I'll be there.
Back in my room, I was totally aghast. Lissa was going to attempt to learn to stake a Strigoi, behind my back, and she was going to get Christian to help her. Those two had been snarling at each other since the breakup. I should have felt flattered that sneaking around me was bringing them together, but I wasn't. I was pissed off. I considered my options. The building Lissa and I were staying in didn't have the kind of front desk curfew security that our school's dorms had had. But the staff here had been instructed to tip off someone in the guardian's office if I got too social. Hans had also told me to stay away from Lissa until further notice. I pondered it all for a moment, thinking it might be worth Hans dragging me from Lissa's room, and then finally thought of an alternate plan. It was late, but not too late, and I left my room for the one next door to mine. Knocking on the door, I hoped my neighbor was still awake. She was a Dampierre my age, a recent graduate from a different school. I didn't own a cell phone, but I'd seen her talking on one earlier today. She answered the door a few moments later, and fortunately, didn't appear to have been in bed. Hey, she said, understandably surprised. Hey, can I send a text from your phone? I didn't want to commandeer her phone with a conversation, and besides, Lissa might just hang up on me. My neighbor shrugged, stepped into the room, and returned with the phone. I had Lissa's number memorized and sent her the following note. I know what you're going to do, and it is a bad idea. I'm going to kick both your asses when I find you. I handed the phone back to its owner. Thanks. If anyone texts back, can you let me know? She told me she would, but I didn't expect any return texts. I got my message another way. When I returned to the room in Lissa's mind, I got to be there when her phone chimed. Christian had left, and she read my text with a rueful smile. My answer came through the link. She knew I was watching. Sorry, Rose. It's a risk I'll have to take. I'm doing this. I tossed and turned that night, still angry at what Lissa and Christian were trying to do. I didn't think I'd ever fall asleep. But when Adrian came to me in a dream, it became clear that my body's exhaustion had defeated my mind's agitation. Las Vegas? I asked. Adrian's dreams always occurred in different places of his choosing. Tonight, we stood on the Strip, very near where Eddie and I had rendezvoused with Lissa and him at the MGM Grand. The bright lights and neon of the hotels and restaurants gleamed in the blackness, but the whole setting was eerily silent compared to the reality. Adrian had not brought the cars or people of the real Las Vegas here. It was like a ghost town. He smiled, leaning against a pole covered in paper ads for concerts and escort services.
Well, we didn't really get a chance to enjoy it while we were there.
True. I stood a few feet away, arms crossed over my chest. I had on jeans and a t-shirt, along with my Nazar. Adrian had apparently decided not to dress me tonight, for which I was grateful. I could have ended up like one of those Maroi showgirls in feathers and sequins. I thought you were avoiding me. I still wasn't entirely sure where our relationship stood, despite his flippant attitude back at the witching hour. He snorted.
It's not by my choice, little Dampier. Those guardians are doing their best to keep you in solitary. Well, kind of.
Christian managed to sneak in and talk to me earlier, I said, hoping to avoid the issue that had to be on Adrian's mind. That I'd risked lives to save my ex-boyfriend. He's going to try to teach Lissa to stake a strakoi. I waited for Adrian to join in my outrage, but he appeared as lax and sardonic as usual.
Not surprised she's going to try. What surprises me is that he'd actually be interested in helping with some crazy theory.
Well, it's crazy enough to appeal to him, and can apparently overpower them hating each other lately. Adrian tilted his head, making some of the hair fall over his eyes. A building with blue neon palm trees cast an eerie glow upon his face as he gave me a knowing look.
Come on, we both know why he's doing it.
Because he thinks his after-school group with Jill and Mia qualifies him to teach that stuff?
Because it gives him an excuse to be around her, without making it look like he gave in first. That way he can still seem manly.
I shifted slightly, so that the lights of a giant sign advertising slot machines didn't shine in my eyes.
That's ridiculous, especially the part about Christian being manly. Guys do ridiculous things for love.
Adrian reached into his pocket and held up a pack of cigarettes.
Do you know how badly I want one of these right now? Yet I suffer, Rose, all for you.
Don't turn romantic on me, I warned, trying to hide my smile.
We don't have time for that. Not when my best friend wants to go monster hunting. Yeah, but how is she actually going to find him? That's kind of a problem.
Adrian didn't need to elaborate on the him. True, I admitted.
And she hasn't been able to charm the stake yet anyway. So until she does, all the kung fu skills in the world won't matter.
Guardians don't do kung fu. And how did you know about the stake?
She asked for my help a couple of times, he explained.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Well, you've been kind of busy. Not that you've even spared a thought for your poor pining boyfriend.
With all my chores, I hadn't spent a huge amount of time in Lissa's head, just enough to check in with her.
Hey, I would have taken you over filing any day.
I'd been so afraid that Adrian would be furious with me after Vegas, yet here he was, light and playful. A little too light. I wanted him to focus on the problem at hand.
What's your take on Lissa and the charms? Is she close to doing it?
Adrian absentmindedly played with the cigarettes, and I was tempted to tell him to go ahead and have one. This was his dream, after all.
Unclear. I haven't taken to the charms the way she has. It's weird having the other elements in there. Makes it hard to manipulate spirit.
Are you helping her anyway? I asked suspiciously. He shook his head in amusement.
What do you think?
I hesitated.
I don't know. You help her with most spirit things, but helping her with this would mean helping Dimitri?
I nodded, not trusting myself to elaborate.
No, Adrian said at last. I'm not helping her, simply because I don't know how.
I exhaled with relief. I really am sorry, I told him. For everything. For lying about where I was and what I was doing. It was wrong. And I don't understand. Well, I don't get why you're being so nice to me.
Should I be mean?
He winked. Is that the kind of thing you're into?
No, of course not. But, I mean, you were so mad when you came to Vegas and found out what was going on. I just thought, I don't know, I thought you hated me.
The amusement faded from his features. He came over to me and rested his hands on my shoulders. His dark green eyes dead, serious.
Rose, nothing in this world could make me hate you.
Not even trying to bring my ex-boyfriend back from the dead? Adrian held on to me, and even in a dream, I could smell his skin and cologne.
Yeah, I'll be honest. If Belikov were walking around right now, alive, like he used to be, there would be some problems. I don't want to think what would happen with us if...
Well, it's not worth wasting time on. He's not here.
I still want us to work, I said meekly. I would still try, even if he were back. I just have a hard time letting someone I care about go.
I know. You did what you did out of love. I can't be mad at you over that. It was stupid. But that's how love is. Do you have any idea what I'd do for you to keep you safe?
Adrian. I couldn't meet his eyes. I suddenly felt unworthy. He was so easy to underestimate. The only thing I could do was lean my head against his chest and let him wrap his arms around me. I'm sorry.
Be sorry you lied, he said, pressing a kiss to my forehead. Don't be sorry you loved him. That's part of you. Part you have to let go, yeah, but still something that made you who you are.
Part you have to let go. Adrian was right, and that was a damned scary thing to admit. I'd had my shot. I'd made my gamble to save Dimitri, and it had failed. Lyssa wouldn't get anywhere with the stake, meaning I really did have to treat Dimitri the way everyone else did. He was dead. I had to move on.
Damn it, I muttered.
What?
Asked Adrian.
I hate it when you're the sane one. That's my job.
Rose?
He said forcibly, trying to keep a serious tone.
I can think of many words to describe you. Sexy and hot being at the top of the list. You know what's not on the list? Sane.
I laughed. Okay, well then my job is to be the less crazy one. He considered.
That I can accept.
I brought my lips up to his, and even if there were still some shaky things in our relationship, there was no uncertainty in how we kissed. Kissing in a dream felt exactly like real life. Heat blossomed between us, and I felt a thrill run through my whole body. He released my hands and wrapped his arms around my waist, bringing us closer. I realized that it was time to start believing what I kept saying. Life did go on. Dimitri might be gone, but I could have something with Adrian. At least until my job took me away. That was, of course, assuming I got one.
Hell, if Hans kept me on desk duty here, and Adrian continued his slothful ways, we could be together forever.
Adrian and I kissed for a long time, pressing closer and closer. At last, I broke things off.
If you had sex in a dream, did that mean you'd really done it?
I didn't know, and I certainly wasn't going to find out. I wasn't ready for that yet. I stepped back, and Adrian took the hint.
Find me when you get some freedom.
Hopefully soon, I said. The guardians can't punish me forever. Adrian looked skeptical, but he let the dream dissolve without further comment. I returned to my own bed and my own dreams. The only thing that stopped me from intercepting Lyssa and Christian when they met up early in her lobby the next day was that Hans summoned me to work even earlier. He put me on paperwork duty, in the vaults, ironically enough, leaving me to file and stew over Lyssa and Christian as I watched them through my bond. I took it as a sign of my multitasking skills that I was able to alphabetize and spy at the same time. Yet my observations were interrupted when a voice said,
"Didn't expect to find you here again."
I blinked out of Lyssa's head and looked up from my paperwork. Mikhail stood before me. In light of the complications that had ensued with the Victor incident, I'd nearly forgotten Mikhail's involvement in our escape. I set the files down and gave him a small smile.
Yeah, weird how fate works, huh? They actually want me here now. Indeed. You're in a fair amount of trouble, I hear.
My smile turned into a grimace.
Tell me about it.
I glanced around, even though I knew we were alone. You didn't get in any trouble, did you? He shook his head.
No one knows what I did.
Good. At least one person had escaped this debacle unscathed. My guilt couldn't have handled him getting caught, too. Mikhail knelt so that he was eye level with me, resting his arms on the table I sat at.
Were you successful? Was it worth it?
That's a hard question to answer. He arched an eyebrow. There were some not-so-successful things that happened, but we did find out what we wanted to know. Or, well, we think we did. His breath caught.
How to restore Strigoi?
I think so. If our informant was telling the truth, then yeah. Except, even if he was, well, it's not that easy to do. It's nearly impossible, really. What is it? I hesitated. Mikhail had helped us, but he wasn't in my circle of confidants. Yet even now, I saw that haunted look in his eyes, the one I'd seen before. The pain of losing his beloved still tormented him. It likely always would. Would I be doing more harm than good by telling him what I'd learned? Would this fleeting hope only hurt him more? I finally decided to tell him, even if he told others, and I didn't think he would. Most would laugh it off anyway. There would be no damage there. The real trouble would come if he told anyone about Victor and Robert. But I didn't actually have to mention their involvement to him. Unlike Christian, it had apparently not occurred to Mikhail that the prison break so big in Maroi News had been pulled off by the teens he helped smuggle out. Mikhail probably couldn't spare a thought for anything that didn't involve saving his Sonya. It takes a spirit user, I explained. One with a spirit charm stake, and then he, or she, has to stake the Strigoi. Spirit? That element was still foreign to most Maroi and Dompiers, but not to him. Like Sonya, I know spirit's supposed to make them more alluring, but I swear, she never needed it. She was beautiful on her own. As always, Mikhail's face took on that same sad look it did whenever Ms. Karp was mentioned. I'd never really seen him truly happy since meeting him, and thought he'd be pretty good-looking if he ever genuinely smiled. He suddenly seemed embarrassed at his romantic lapse and returned to business.
What spirit user could do with staking?
None, I said flatly. Lissa Dragomir and Adrian Ivashkov are the only two spirit users I even know. Well, aside from Avery Lazar. I was leaving Oksana and Robert out of this. Neither of them has the skill to do it. You know that as well as I do. And Adrian has no interest in it anyway. Mikhail was sharp, picking up on what I didn't say.
But Lissa does?
Yes, I admitted. But it would take her years to learn to do it, if not longer. And she's the last of her line. She can't be risked like that. The truth of my words hit him, and I couldn't help but share his pain and disappointment. Like me, he'd put a lot of faith into this last-ditch effort to be reunited with his lost love. I had just affirmed that it was possible, yet impossible. I think it would have been easier on both of us to learn it had all been a hoax. He sighed and stood up.
Well, I appreciate you going after this. Sorry your punishment is for nothing.
I shrugged. It's okay. It was worth it.
I hope.
His face turned hesitant.
I hope it ends soon and doesn't affect anything. Affect what?
I asked sharply, catching the edge in his voice.
Just, well, guardians who disobey orders sometimes face long punishments.
Oh, this. He was referring to my constant fear of being stuck with a desk job. I tried to play flippant, and not to show how much that possibility scared me. I'm sure Hans was bluffing. I mean, would he really make me do this forever just because I ran away and... I stopped, my mouth hanging open when a knowing glint flashed in Mikhail's eyes. I'd heard long ago how he'd tried to track down Ms. Karp, but the logistics had never really hit me until now. No one would have condoned his search. He would have had to leave on his own, breaking protocol, and come skulking back when he finally gave up on locating her. He would have been in just as much trouble as me for going MIA. Is that... I swallowed. Is that why you work down here in the vaults now? Mikhail didn't answer my question. Instead, he glanced down with a small smile and pointed at my stacks of paper.
F comes before L, he said before turning and leaving.
Damn, I muttered, looking down. He was right. Apparently, I couldn't alphabetize so well while watching Lissa. Still, once I was alone, that didn't stop me from tuning back into her mind. I wanted to know what she was doing, and I didn't want to think about how what I'd done would probably be considered worse than Mikhail's deeds in the eyes of the Guardians, or that a similar, or worse, punishment might be in store for me. Lissa and Christian were at a hotel near Lehigh's campus. The middle of the vampiric day meant evening for the Human University. Lissa's tour wouldn't start until their morning the next day, which meant she had to bide her time at the hotel now and try to adjust to a human schedule. Bliss's new guardians, Serena and Grant, were with her, along with three extras that the Queen had sent as well. Tatiana had allowed Christian to come along and hadn't been nearly as opposed as Lyssa had feared, which again made me question if the Queen really was as awful as I'd always believed. Priscilla Voda, a close advisor of the Queen that both Lyssa and I liked, was also accompanying Lyssa as she looked around the school. Two of the additional guardians stayed with Priscilla. The third stayed with Christian. They ate dinner as a group and then retired to their rooms. Serena was actually staying with Lyssa in hers while Grant stood guard outside the door. Watching all this triggered a pang in me. Pair guarding, it was what I'd been trained for, what I'd been expecting my whole life to do for Lyssa. Serena was a picture-perfect example of guardian aloofness, being there but not there as Lyssa hung up some of her clothes. A knock at the door immediately shot Serena into action. Her stake was in hand, and she strode to the door, looking out through its peephole. I couldn't help but admire her reaction time, though part of me would never believe anyone could guard Lyssa as well as I could. "Get back," Serena said to Lyssa. A moment later, the tension in Serena faded a tiny bit, and she opened the door. Grant stood there with Christian beside him.
"He's here to see you,"
Grant said, like it wasn't obvious. Lyssa nodded. Yeah, come on in. Christian stepped inside when Grant backed away. Christian gave Lyssa a meaningful look as he did, making a small head nod toward Serena. "Hey, would you mind giving us some privacy?" As soon as the words were out of Lyssa's mouth, she turned bright pink. "I mean, we just need to talk about some things, that's all." Serena kept her face almost neutral, but it was clear she thought they were going to do more than talk. Average teen dating wasn't usually hot gossip in the Maroi world, but Lyssa, with her notoriety, attracted a bit more attention with her romantic affairs. Serena would have known Christian and Lyssa had gone out and broken up. For all she knew, they were back together now. Lyssa inviting him on this trip certainly suggested it. Serena glanced around warily. The balance of protection and privacy was always difficult with Maroi and guardians, and hotel rooms like this made it even harder. If they were on a vampiric schedule, with everyone sleeping during daylight hours, I didn't doubt Serena would have stepped into the hall with Grant. But it was dark outside, and even a fifth-floor window could be a Strigoi liability. Serena wasn't keen on leaving her new charge alone. Lyssa's hotel suite had an expansive living room and work area, with an adjacent bedroom accessible through frosted glass French doors. Serena nodded toward them.
"How about I just go in there?"
A smart idea. Provided privacy, but kept her close by. Then, Serena realized the implications, and she blushed.
"I mean, unless you guys want to go in there, and I'll..."
"No," exclaimed Lyssa, growing more and more embarrassed. "This is fine. We'll stay in here. We're just talking." I wasn't sure whose benefit that was for, Serena's or Christian's. Serena nodded and disappeared into the bedroom with a book, which reminded me eerily of Dimitri. She shut the door. Lyssa wasn't sure how well noise traveled, so she turned the TV on. "God, that was miserable," she groaned. Christian seemed totally at ease as he leaned against the wall. He wasn't the formal type by any means, but he'd put on dress clothes for dinner earlier and still wore them. They looked good on him, no matter how much he always complained.
"Why?"
"Because she thinks we're, well, you know."
"So, what's the big deal?"
Lyssa rolled her eyes. "You're a guy. Of course it doesn't matter to you."
"Hey, it's not like we haven't. Besides, better for her to think that than to know the truth."
The reference to their past sex life inspired a mix of emotions, embarrassment, anger, and longing. But she refused to let that show. "Fine, let's just get this over with. We've got a big day, and our sleep's going to be all screwy as it is. Where do we start? Do you want me to get the steak?"
"No need yet. We should just practice some basic defensive moves."
He straightened up and moved toward the center of the room, dragging a table out of the way. I swear, if not for the context, watching the two of them attempt combat training on their own would have been hilarious.
"Okay,"
he said.
"So you already know how to punch."
"What? I do not." He frowned.
You knocked out Reed Lazar. Rose mentioned it like 100 times. I've never heard her so proud about something.
I punched one person once in my life, she pointed out. And Rose was coaching me. I don't know if I could do it again. Christian nodded, looking disappointed. Not in her skills, but because he had an impatient nature and wanted to jump right into the really hardcore fighting stuff. Nonetheless, he proved a surprisingly patient teacher as he went over the fine art of punching and hitting. A lot of his moves were actually things he'd picked up from me. He'd been a decent student. Was he at Guardian levels? No, not by a long shot. And Lissa? She was smart and competent, but she wasn't wired for combat, no matter how badly she wanted to help with this. Punching Reed Lazar had been a beautiful thing, but it didn't appear to be anything that would ever become natural for her. Fortunately, Christian started with simple dodging and watching one's opponent. Lissa was just a beginner at it, but showed a lot of promise. Christian seemed to chalk it up to his instructive skills, but I'd always thought spirit users had a kind of preternatural instinct about what others might do next. I doubted it would work on Strigoi, though. After a little of that, Christian finally returned to offense, and that's when things went bad. Lissa's gentle healing nature didn't mesh with that, and she refused to really strike out with her full force, for fear of hurting him. When he realized what was happening, his snarky temper started to rise.
Come on, don't hold back.
I'm not, she protested, delivering a punch to his chest that didn't come close to budging him. He raked a hand irritably through his hair.
You are too. I've seen you knock on a door harder than you're hitting me.
That's a ridiculous metaphor.
And, he added, you aren't aiming for my face.
I don't want to leave a mark.
Well, at the rate we're going, there's no danger of that, he muttered. Besides, you can heal it away.
I was amused at their bickering, but didn't like his casual encouragement of spirit use. I still hadn't shaken my guilt over the long-term damage that the prison break could have caused. Reaching forward, Christian grabbed her by the wrist and jerked her toward him. He balled her fingers with his other hand and then slowly demonstrated how to swing a punch upward by pulling her fist toward his face. He was more interested in showing the technique and motion, so it only brushed against him.
See? Arc upward. Make the impact right there. Don't worry about hurting me.
It's not that simple. Her protest died off, and suddenly, they both seemed to notice the situation they were in. There was barely any space between them, and his fingers were still wrapped around her wrist. They felt warm against Lissa's skin and were sending electricity through the rest of her body. The air between them seemed thick and heavy, like it might just wrap them up and pull them together. From the widening of Christian's eyes and sudden intake of breath, I was willing to bet he was having a similar reaction at being so close to her body. Coming to himself, he abruptly released her hand and stepped back.
Well,
he said roughly, though still clearly unnerved by the proximity.
I guess you aren't really serious about helping Rose.
That did it. Sexual tension notwithstanding, anger kindled up in Lissa at the comment. She balled her fist and totally caught Christian off guard when she swung out and sucked him in the face. It didn't have the grace of her Reed punch, but it took Christian hard. Unfortunately, she lost her balance in the maneuver and stumbled forward into him. The two of them went down together, hitting the floor and knocking over a small table and lamp nearby. The lamp caught the table's corner and broke. Meanwhile, Lissa had landed on Christian. His arms instinctively went out around her, and if the space between them before had been small, it was non-existent now. They stared into each other's eyes, and Lissa's heart was pounding fiercely in her chest. That tantalizing electric feeling crackled around them again, and all the world for her seemed to focus on his lips. Both she and I wondered later if they might have kissed, but just then, Serena came bursting out of the bedroom. She was on Guardian high alert, body tense and ready to face an army of Strigoi with her stake in hand. She came screeching to a halt when she saw the scene before her. What appeared to be a romantic interlude. Admittedly, it was an odd one, what with the broken lamp and swelling red mark on Christian's face. It was pretty awkward for everyone, and Serena's attack mode faded to one of confusion.
Oh, she said uncertainly. Sorry.
Embarrassment flooded Lissa, as well as self-resentment at being affected so much by Christian. She was furious at him, after all. Hastily, she pulled away and sat up, and in her flustered state, she felt the need to make it clear that there was nothing romantic whatsoever going on.
It's not what you think,
she stuttered, looking anywhere except at Christian, who was getting to his feet and seemed just as mortified as Lissa.
We were fighting, I mean, practicing fighting. I want to learn to defend against Strigoi, and attack them, and stake them, so Christian was kind of helping me, that's all.
There was something cute about her rambling, and it reminded me charmingly of Jill. Serena visibly relaxed, and while she'd mastered that blank face all guardians excelled at, it was clear she was amused. Well, she said, it doesn't look like you're doing a very good job. Christian turned indignant as he stroked his injured cheek.
Hey, we are too. I taught her this.
Serena still thought it was funny, but a serious considering glint was starting to form in her eyes.
That seems like it was more lucky than anything else.
She hesitated, like she was on the verge of a big decision. At last she said,
Look, if you guys are serious about this, then you need to learn to do it the right way. I'll show you how.
No way. I was seriously on the verge of escaping the court and hitchhiking to Lehigh to really show them how to throw a punch, with Serena as my example, when something jolted me away from Lissa and back into my own reality. Hans. I had a sarcastic greeting on my lips, but he didn't give me a chance.
Forget the filing and follow me. You've been summoned.
What? Highly unexpected. Summoned where? His face was grim.
To see the queen.
Penguin Audio presents Spiritbound, a Vampire Academy novel by Rochelle Mead. Read by Emily Schaefer. Chapter 14. The last time Tatiana had wanted to yell at me, she'd simply taken me to one of her private sitting rooms. It had made for a weird atmosphere, like we were at tea time, except people didn't usually scream at other people during tea time. I had no reason to believe this would be any different, until I noticed my escort was leading me to the main business buildings of the court, the places where all royal governing was conducted. Shit, this was more serious than I'd thought. And indeed, when I was finally ushered into the room where Tatiana waited, well, I nearly came to a standstill and couldn't enter. Only a slight touch on my back from one of the guardians with me kept me moving forward. The place was packed. I didn't know for sure which room I was in. The Moroi actually kept a bona fide throne room for their king or queen, but I didn't think this was it. This room was still heavily decorated, conveying an old-world royal feel, with painstakingly carved floral molding and shining gold candle holders on the walls. There were actually lit candles in them, too. Their light reflected off the metallic decorations in the room. Everything glittered, and I felt like I'd stumbled into a stage production. And really, I might as well have, because after a moment's surveying, I realized where I was. The people in the room were split. 12 of them sat at a long table on a dais, at what was clearly meant to be the focal point of the room. Tatiana herself sat at the middle of the table, with 6 Moroi on one side and 5 Moroi on the other. The other side of the room was simply set with rows of chairs, still elaborate and padded with satin cushions, which were also filled with Moroi, the audience. The people sitting on either side of Tatiana were the tip-off. They were older Moroi, but ones who carried a regal air. 11 Moroi for the 11 acting royal families. Lissa was not 18, though she was about to be, I realized with a start, and therefore had no spot yet. Someone was sitting in for Priscilla Voda. I was looking at the council, the princes and princesses of the Moroi world. The oldest member of each family claimed the royal title and an advisory spot beside Tatiana. Sometimes the eldest waived the spot and gave it to someone the family felt was more capable, but the selectee was almost always at least 45. The council elected the Moroi king or queen, a position held until death or retirement. In rare circumstances, With enough backing from the royal families, a monarch could be forcibly removed from office. Each prince or princess on the council was in turn advised by a family council, and glancing back at the audience, I recognized clusters of family members sitting together. Ivashkovs, Lazars, Batikas. The very back rows appeared to be observers. Tasha and Adrian sat together, and I knew for a fact they weren't members of the royal council or family councils. Still, seeing them set me at ease a little. I remained near the entrance to the room, shifting uneasily from foot to foot, wondering what was in store. I hadn't just earned public humiliation. I'd apparently earned it in front of the most important Maroi in the world. Wonderful. A gangly Maroi with patchy white hair stepped forward around the side of the long table and cleared his throat. Immediately, the hum of conversation died. Silence filled the room.
"This session of the Maroi Royal Council is now in order," he declared. "Her Royal Majesty, Tatiana Marina Ivashkov, is presiding."
He gave a slight bow in her direction and then discreetly backed off to the side of the room, standing near some guardians who lined the walls like decorations themselves. Tatiana always dressed up at the parties I saw her at, but for a formal event like this, she was really channeling the queen look. Her dress was long-sleeved navy silk, and a glittering crown of blue and white stones sat atop her elaborately braided hair. In a beauty pageant, I would have written such gems off as rhinestones. On her, I didn't question for a moment that they were real sapphires and diamonds.
"Thank you,"
she said. She was also using her royal voice, resonant and impressive, filling the room.
"We will be continuing our conversation from yesterday."
Wait, what? They'd been discussing me yesterday too? I noticed then that I'd wrapped my arms around myself in a sort of protective stance and immediately dropped them. I didn't want to look weak, no matter what they had in store for me.
"Today we will be hearing testimony from a newly made guardian."
Tatiana's sharp gaze fell on me. The whole room's dead.
"Rosemary Hathaway, will you please come forward?"
I did, keeping my head high and posture confident. I didn't exactly know where to stand, so I picked the middle of the room, directly facing Tatiana. If I was going to be paraded in public, I wished someone would have tipped me off to wear guardian black and white. Whatever, I'd show no fear, even in jeans and a t-shirt. I gave a small, proper bow and then met her eyes directly, bracing for what was to come.
"Will you please state your name?"
she asked. She'd already done it for me, but I still said, "Rosemary Hathaway."
"How old are you?"
18.
"And how long have you been 18?
"A few months." She waited a couple moments to let it sink in, as though this were important information.
"Miss Hathaway, we understand that around that time you withdrew from St. Vladimir's Academy. Is this correct?"
That's what this was about? Not the Vegas trip with Lyssa? Yes. I offered no more info. Oh, God. I hoped she didn't get into Dimitri. She shouldn't have known about my relationship with him, but there was no telling what information could spread around here.
"You went to Russia to hunt Strigoi?"
"Yes."
"As a type of personal revenge following the attack at St. Vladimir's?"
Yes. No one said anything, but my response definitely caused a stir in the room. People shifted uneasily and glanced at their neighbors. Strigoi always inspired fear, and someone actively seeking them out was still an unusual concept among us. Oddly, Tatiana seemed very pleased by this confirmation. Was it going to be used as more ammunition against me?
"We would assume, then," she continued, "that you are one of those who believe in direct strikes against the Strigoi?"
"Yes."
"Many had different reactions to the terrible attack at St. Vladimir's," she said. "You aren't the only Dampier who wanted to strike back against the Strigoi, though you were certainly the youngest."
I had known about others going on vigilante sprees. Well, aside from some reckless Dampiers in Russia. If that was the story about my trip she was willing to believe, that was fine with me.
We have reports from both guardians and alchemists in Russia that you were successful.
This was the first time I'd heard the alchemists mentioned in public, but of course they'd be a common topic among the council.
Can you tell me how many you killed?
I stared in surprise. I'm not sure, Your Majesty. At least, I racked my brain. 7? It might have been more. She thought so too.
That might be a modest estimate, compared to what our sources say, she noted grandly. Nonetheless, still an impressive number. Did you perform the kills by yourself?
Sometimes I did. Sometimes I had help. There were some other Dampiers I worked with once in a while. Technically, I'd had Strigoi help as well, but I wasn't going to mention that.
They were close to your age?
Yes. Tatiana said no more, and as though receiving a cue, a woman beside her spoke up. I believe she was the Zelsky princess.
When did you kill your first Strigoi?
I frowned. Last December.
And you were 17?
Yes.
Did you perform that kill yourself?
Well, mostly. A couple friends helped with distraction. I hoped they weren't going to push for more details. My first kill had occurred when Mason had died, and aside from the events surrounding Dimitri, that memory tormented me the most. But Princess Kanta didn't want too many other details. She and the others, who soon joined in the questioning, mostly wanted to know about my kills. They were slightly interested in knowing when the other Dampiers had helped me, but didn't want to go into when I'd had Maroi help. They also glossed over my disciplinary record, which I found baffling. The rest of my academic details were mentioned. My exceptional combat grades, how I'd been one of the best when Lissa and I had run away our sophomore year, and how quickly I'd made up for lost time to become top in my class again, at least as far as fighting went. They talked also about how I'd protected Lissa whenever we were out in the world alone, and finally concluded with my exceptional trial scores.
Thank you, Guardian Hathaway. You may leave.
Tatiana's dismissive voice left no room for doubt. She wanted me out of there. I was only too eager to comply, giving another bow and then scurrying out. I cast a quick glance at Tasha and Adrian as I did, and the Queen's voice rang out as I cleared the door.
That concludes our session today. We will convene again tomorrow.
I wasn't surprised when Adrian caught up with me a few minutes later. Hans hadn't ordered me to come back and work after the session, so I had decided to read that as freedom. Okay, I said, slipping my hand into Adrian's. Enlighten me with your royal political wisdom. What was that all about?
No clue. I'm the last person to ask about political stuff, he said. I don't even go to those things, but Tasha found me at the last minute and said to come with her. I guess she got a tip off you'd be there, but she was just as confused.
Neither of us had said anything, but I realized I was leading him toward one of the buildings that housed commerce, restaurants, shops, etc. I was starving all of a sudden. I got the impression this was part of something they'd already been talking about. She mentioned their last session.
It was closed, like tomorrow's. No one knows what they're discussing.
Then why make this one public? It didn't seem fair that the Queen and Council could pick and choose what they shared with others. Everything should have been public. He frowned.
Probably because they're going to hold a vote soon, and that'll be public. If your testimony plays some role, then the Council may want to make sure other Maroi witnessed it, so that everyone understands the decision when it comes. He paused. But what do I know? I'm no politician.
Makes it sound like it's already decided, I grumbled. Why have a vote at all? And why would I have anything to do with government? He opened the door to a small cafe that sold light lunch food, burgers and sandwiches. Adrian had been raised with fancy restaurants and gourmet food. I think he preferred that, but he also knew I didn't like always being on display, or being reminded that I was with a royal from an elite family. I appreciated that he'd known I'd just want something ordinary today. Nonetheless, our being together earned us a few curious glances and whispers from the diner's patrons. At the school, we'd been a source of speculation. But here at court, We were a main stage attraction. Images were important at court, and most Dampier-Moroy relationships were carried out in secret. Us being so open, especially considering Adrian's connections, was scandalous and shocking, and people weren't always discreet with their reactions. I'd heard all sorts of things since returning to court. One woman had called me shameless. Another had speculated aloud why Tatiana hadn't simply dealt with me. Fortunately, most of our audience was content to stare today, making them easy to ignore. There was a small line of thought on Adrian's forehead as we sat down at a table. Maybe they're voting to make Ulyssa's guardian after all. I was so astonished that I couldn't say anything for several seconds when the waitress suddenly appeared. I finally stammered out my order and then stared at Adrian with wide eyes. Seriously? The session had been an examination of my skills after all. It made sense. Except... no. The council wouldn't go to the trouble of holding sessions for one guardian assignment. My hopes fell. Adrian gave a shrug of acknowledgement. True, but this isn't an ordinary guardian assignment. This is the last of her line. Everyone, including my aunt, has a special interest in her, giving her someone like you who's... I gave him a dangerous look as he grasped for a word. Controversial could upset some people. And that's why they actually wanted me there to describe what I've done. To convince people in person that I'm competent. Even as I spoke the words, I still didn't dare believe them. It was too good to be true. I just can't imagine it, seeing as I seem to be in so much trouble with the guardians.
I don't know, he said. It's just a guess. Who knows? Maybe they do think the Las Vegas thing was just a harmless prank.
There was a bitter tone in his voice over that.
And I told you that Aunt Tatiana was coming around to you. Maybe she wants you as Lissa's guardian now, but needs to make a public display to justify it.
That was a startling thought. But if I do get to come with Lissa, what are you going to do?
Get respectable and come to college too?
I don't know, he said, green eyes thoughtful as he sipped his drink. Maybe I will.
That was also unexpected, and my conversation with his mother returned to my mind. What if I was Lissa's guardian in college, and he was with us for the next 4 years? I was fairly certain Daniela had thought we'd be splitting up this summer. I thought so too, and was surprised to feel how relieved I was that I might get to stay with him. Dimitri always left my heart full of pain and longing, but I still wanted Adrian in my life. I grinned at him and rested my hand on his. I'm not sure what I'd do with you if you were respectable. He lifted my hand to his lips and kissed it.
I've got some suggestions, he told me.
I didn't know if it was his words or the feel of his mouth on my skin that sent shivers through me. I was about to ask what those suggestions were when our interlude was interrupted by Hans.
Hathaway,
he said, one eyebrow arched as he stood over us.
You and I have some very different ideas about the definition of punishment.
He had a point. In my mind, punishment involved easy things like lashings and starvation, not filing. Instead, I replied, you didn't tell me to come back after I saw the queen. He gave me an exasperated look.
I also didn't tell you to go off on a play date. Come on, back to the vaults.
But I have a BLT coming.
You'll get your lunch break in another couple hours like the rest of us.
I tried to repress my outrage. They hadn't been feeding me bread crusts and water during my work detail, but the food hadn't tasted much better. Just then, the waitress returned with our food. I grabbed the sandwich before she even set the plates down and wrapped it in a napkin. Can I take it to go?
If you can eat it before we get back.
His voice was skeptical, seeing as the vault was pretty close. Clearly, he was underestimating my ability to consume food. In spite of Hans' disapproving expression, I gave Adrian a kiss goodbye and a look that told him maybe we'd continue our conversation. He gave me a happy, knowing smile that I only saw for a second before Hans ordered me away. True to my expectations, I managed to get the sandwich down before we arrived back at the Guardian's building, though I did feel a little nauseous for the next half hour or so. My lunchtime was almost dinner time for Lissa, out in the human world. Returning to my miserable punishment, I cheered up a little at the joy running through her via our bond. She'd spent the whole day on her campus tour of Lehigh, and it was everything she'd hoped it could be. She loved it all. She loved the beautiful buildings, the grounds, the dorms, and especially the classes. A glimpse at the course catalog opened up a world of subjects that even St. Vladimir's superior education hadn't offered us. She wanted to see and do everything that the school had to offer. And even though she wished I was there, she was still excited about the fact that it was her birthday. Priscilla had given her some elaborate jewelry and had promised a fancy dinner that night. It wasn't exactly the type of celebration Lissa had hoped for, but the thrill of her 18th birthday was still intoxicating, particularly as she looked around at the dream school she'd be attending soon. I confess, I felt a pang of jealousy. Despite Adrian's theory about why the Queen had called me in today, I knew, as did Lissa, that the odds of me going to college with her were still probably non-existent. Some petty part of me couldn't understand how Lissa could therefore be excited about it if I wasn't going to be along. Childish of me, I know. I didn't have long to sulk, though, because once all the touring was done, Lissa's entourage returned to the hotel. Priscilla told them they could clean up for an hour or so before heading to dinner. For Lissa, this meant more fighting practice time. My brooding mood immediately turned irate. Things got worse when I realized that earlier in the day, Serena had told Grant about Lissa and Christian's desire to defend themselves. He apparently thought that it was a good idea, too. It would figure. Lissa had two progressive guardians. Why couldn't she have gotten some stodgy, old-school person who would be horrified at the thought of a Maroi even thinking about fighting off a Strigoi? So, while I sat helpless and unable to smack sense into any of them, Lissa and Christian now had two instructors. Not only did this mean more learning opportunities, it also meant Serena had a competent partner to demonstrate certain moves with. She and Grant sparred, explaining maneuvers, while Lissa and Christian watched wide-eyed. Fortunately, well, not for Lissa, she and I soon noticed something. The guardians didn't know the true reason Lissa was interested in fighting. They had no idea, how could they have, that she wanted to go hunt and stake a Strigoi in the feeble hope of bringing him back to life. They thought she just wanted to learn basic defense, something that seemed very sensible to them. So that was what they taught. Grant and Serena also made Lissa and Christian practice on each other. I suspected there were a couple reasons for this. One was that Lissa and Christian didn't have the skill to do much damage to each other. The second reason was that it amused the guardians. It did not amuse Lissa and Christian. There was still so much tension between them, both sexual and angry, that they resented being in such close contact. Grant and Serena stopped the two Maroi from doing any more face-punching, but simple dodges often meant brushing against each other, fingers sliding against skin in the heat of the action. Every once in a while, the guardians would have someone play Strigoi, putting Lissa or Christian on the offensive. The two Maroi welcomed this to a certain extent. After all, direct attacks were what they wanted to learn. But when Christian, playing Strigoi, lunged at Lissa and pushed her into a wall, learning offense suddenly didn't seem like such a good idea to her. The maneuver pressed them right up to each other, his arms holding hers. She could smell him and feel him and was overwhelmed by the fantasy of him just holding her there and kissing her.
"I think you two should go back to basic defense," said Grant, interrupting her traitorous feelings.
He sounded like he was more worried about them hurting each other than the possibility that they might start making out. It took Lissa and Christian a moment to even register his words, let alone part from each other. When they did, both avoided eye contact and returned to the couch. The guardians launched into more examples of how to avoid an attacker. Lissa and Christian had seen this so many times that they knew the lesson by heart, and their earlier attraction gave way to frustration. Lissa was too polite to say anything, but after 15 minutes of Serena and Grant showing how to block with your arms and dodge someone reaching for you, Christian finally spoke.
"How do you stake a Strigoi?"
Serena froze at Christian's words.
"Did you say stake?"
Rather than being shocked, Grant chuckled.
I don't think that's anything you need to worry about. You want to focus on getting away from Ishtagoy, not getting closer.
Lissa and Christian exchanged an uneasy look.
I helped kill Ishtagoy before,
Christian pointed out.
I used fire at the school's attack. Are you saying that's not okay? That I shouldn't have done it?
Now Serena and Grant traded glances. Ha, I thought. Those two weren't as progressive as I thought. They were coming from a defense point of view, not offense.
Of course you should have, said Grant at last. What you did was amazing, and in a similar situation, sure, you wouldn't want to be helpless. But that's the point. You have your fire. If it came down to you fighting Ishtagoy, your magic's going to be the way to go. You already know how to use it, and it'll keep you safely out of their range.
What about me? Asked Lissa. I don't have any kind of magic like that. You'll never get close enough to Ishtagoy for it to be a problem, said Serena fiercely. We won't let you.
Besides, added Grant with amusement, it's not like we just go around handing out stakes.
I would have given anything for them to go take a look in her suitcase right then. Lissa bit her lip and refused to make eye contact with Christian again, for fear of giving away their intentions. This was not going according to their crazy plan. Christian again took the lead.
Can you at least demo it?
He asked, trying and succeeding to look like someone just seeking the sensational and exciting.
Is it hard to do? It seems like all you have to do is aim and hit.
Grant snorted.
Hardly. There's a bit more to it than that.
Lissa leaned forward, clasping her hands together as she followed Christian's lead. Well then, don't worry about teaching us. Just show us.
Yeah, let's see.
Christian shifted restlessly beside her. As he did, their arms brushed, and instantly they moved apart.
It's not a game, Grant said.
Nonetheless, he walked over to his coat and produced his stake. Serena stared incredulously.
What are you going to do? She asked. Stake me?
He gave that small chuckle of his and searched the room with his sharp eyes.
Of course not. Ah, there we are.
He walked over to a small armchair that had a decorative pillow. He lifted it up and tested its width. It was fat and thickly filled with some sort of dense stuffing. He returned to Lissa and gestured for her to stand. To everyone's astonishment, he handed her his stake. Locking his body into a rigid position, he gripped the pillow hard between his hands and extended it out a couple of feet in front of him.
Go ahead,
he said.
Aim and hit it.
Are you crazy? Asked Serena.
Don't worry, he said. Princess Voda can afford the incidentals. I'm proving a point. Strike the pillow.
Lissa hesitated only a few more moments. An excitement that seemed unusually intense filled her. I knew she'd been anxious to learn this, but her desire for it seemed higher than before. Gritting her teeth, she stepped forward and awkwardly tried to impale the pillow with her stake. She was cautious, fearing she'd hurt Grant, but there was no need for her to worry. She didn't even budge him, and all she managed with the stake was a slight snagging of the fabric on the surface. She tried a few more times, but achieved a little more. Christian, being who he was, said,
That's all you can do?
Glaring, she handed him the stake. You do better. Christian stood, snarky smile disappearing as he studied the pillow critically and sized up his blow. As he did, Lissa glanced around and saw the humor in the guardian's eyes. Even Serena had relaxed. They were making their point, proving staking wasn't an easy thing to learn. I was glad, and my opinion of them rose. Christian finally made his move. He did actually pierce the fabric, but the pillow and its stuffing proved too much to break through. And again, Grant wasn't shaken at all. After more failed attempts, Christian sat down again and handed the stake back. It was kind of fun to see Christian's cocky attitude shut down a little. Even Lissa enjoyed it, despite her own frustration over how difficult this was becoming.
The stuffing's got too much resistance,
Christian complained. Grant handed his stake to Serena.
What? And you think a Strigoi's body is going to be easier to get through? With muscles and ribs in the way?
Grant got back into his position, and without hesitation,